free my mind. Open my heart with the whispers of truth. To live a conscious life, to live a conscious life. On the growing edge, on the growing edge.
And now, here's Allie.
Hello and welcome to Growing Edge Live. I'm Allie Benjamin, and it is my great joy to jump on every week and share Growing Edge Live. We have deep conversations with interesting individuals that have organized their life, and they channel their time, their talent, their energy, their resources, their passion, their creativity into doing good works in the world and bringing us together with a sense of empowerment and love. So thank you for being here, whether you're here for the first time or you're back, welcome back. And we're going to deep dive right into the first segment, Ask Allie. And I have a question today from Naomi. And Naomi says, I'm feeling discontent with my life and I am feeling the desire for something more. I am wanting to restructure my life and experience more joy. I'm struggling to know what to let go of and what to lean into. I'm not loving my job, and some of my relationships weigh me down. Could you please share some insights? Thank you. Well, Naomi, thanks for this question. I think a lot of people are feeling this based on my conversations out in the world. I'm getting a sense that a lot of people are discontent. They're not happy with the way things are. And want to find some new joy. And so I've done a lot of work on this myself over the last few months as I've been, we had a move, we moved into a new home, and I'm looking for some of these same things. And so I can share a little bit about what I've done to lean in a bit more to what brings me joy and to let go of the things that have been weighing me down. And I was surprised after I spent some time in contemplation of this and in meditation and kind of tuning in to the wisdom of my body, I realized there were several things in my life that were, I thought were, I was interested in, I thought were supporting me. But after deeper contemplation, I found that actually, it was time to let go of some of those things. And that can be really scary, because if we're interested in maintaining relationships and not ruffling feathers or disturbing the water, then we can hold on to relationships a lot longer than is really good for us. And so those things can be hard. Letting go can be hard. But I also know, based on my own experience, holding on to things, people, jobs, pastimes, activities, habits, behaviors, can also, if they're not good for me, can really bring this sense of I'm not really present in my life. I'm not really living my own authentic expression. And there's this feeling of almost betrayal, like I'm betraying myself if I keep these things, these people in my life, and it doesn't seem to fit. And so I'd really encourage you to take some time to really explore, go on that inner journey, turn within and really ask yourself, you know, what is it that my heart really desires? If you're not feeling joy and fulfillment in the way things are, it's simply you haven't asked yourself the right questions. What lights me up? What am I growing into? And this podcast, this show is all about the growing edge. You know, how are we growing? Are we doing it consciously, or are we just growing without giving it much thought? It's almost like living by default. And so as you spend some time with yourself, going inside and exploring your head center, your brain, your intellect, exploring your memories of the past and imagining a better future. That's one way of entering into this. Also, exploring your heart, dropping down to the intelligence and the wisdom of your heart. what am I coming into alignment with? What are the kinds of experiences bring me joy? And this is something that I love to do every year. I go inside my heart and I ask myself, I bring up a memory of doing something I really love to do. And for me, it's painting. And so as I drop into the feelings I get when I'm doing something I love, like painting or having a walk in nature, and I really start to deepen into that feeling that's associated with doing something I love, and really get a sense of identifying those words, those feeling words that bring me alive. And for me, it's when I'm in that flow, when I'm painting, I feel a deep sense of connection with life. I feel a deep sense of joy, and I feel a deep sense of light. And so I mark down these words, these joy, light, connection, and then I start to form some affirmations or some statements that I can say to myself in the morning when I do my meditation that sort of get me back into that vibe, into that vibration of being alive, being on the growing edge, being in tune with that I'm actually a conduit or a vehicle for creation to flow. And these words, connection, light, love, joy, they get me into that state or that zone. And I sort of slip into an expanded version of myself where I'm more attuned to thinking of ideas of what to do or where to go or what to explore. So I think this is one way of leaning in as you start to tune into yourself and what you really enjoy in life, and be open and available for the universe or for whatever, for life in general, to present you with opportunities. I think once we set that intention to want to expand our experience, to lean into life or live my life more fully, we sort of become more attuned, we have the eyes to see the things that, like the breadcrumbs on the path that we can follow and explore and expand. And as far as letting go, I know that creation, it's a powerful part of creation. Letting go of what no longer serves then makes room, space for the energy of something new. And so only you know what and who you're ready to let go of. And something I'd share, I guess, is the idea that everything happens for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. I think that can be sort of a little bit of a guide. You know, has this person, has this job, has this activity sort of run its course? And really check in with yourself. Check in with your body, because your body knows. Your body has this instinct and urge to do and to act and connect with life. And so when you drop down from the head and the heart and then sink into the body, all manner of wisdom and opens up as the body will share the things it is wanting. And so letting go of those things that no longer serve, has it run its course? Was it for a particular reason? And then I think really blessing and thanking all of those things that you're ready to let go of, because everything that we encounter in life, every relationship, every new place that we go to, every activity that we're involved with, including our work, our jobs, all of it has given us gifts and fueled us to get to the point where we're ready to stand on the edge of our own evolution and jump into the new. So I hope some of this has helped, or all of it has helped. And if you have a question, viewer, if you have a question that you'd like us to explore, you can send that to growingedgelive@gmail.com. So thanks a lot, Naomi. Okay, so now we're going to dive into my most fun thing I do every week, which is to have a conversation with someone. And today I've got Arjuna Adar, and I'm so excited to have this conversation. I told him last night we were having a little chat on the phone, and he was sharing some things, and I said, I'm a little bit nervous to have this conversation with you. God knows where it's going to go. So It will be really exciting, I know. For me, anyway. I met Arjuna several years ago. It was probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago now. I was at a retreat at the Franciscan Renewal Center in, I forget the name of it, just outside of Phoenix. And he had come as a keynote speaker, and he had authored a few books. So we had his books, and he showed up, and I was immediately, when I heard him speak, I thought, oh, he's a fellow Brit. And so there was sort of that interest in me to find out more about him. I don't meet English people all the time. So that was sort of the first thing, that he's English. And then when I heard him speak, I was really intrigued as to how he combined his experience of I think he called it awakening at the time, or this experience of oneness with his everyday life. And he shared, and I was talking to my husband this morning, and he was there at this retreat also, and he remembers some of the exercises, like the, you know, who are you and eye gazing type of things. I don't remember that, but he did. And so I'm excited to explore and find out more about where you are now. We've also had a few things in common, unfortunately. We both have lost a son within the last several years, and losing a child can, you know, stir up so much and interrupt our lives in such profound ways. So I'm thinking we may talk a little bit about that. And one more thing that we have in common, I actually found myself living in the same town as you a couple of years ago. My husband and I had gone on the road and were living in our camper van, our Om Shanti home. And we ended up staying in the in-town campground in Nevada City for about 3 months. And so I would walk every day into Nevada City and get a coffee. And that was during COVID, so everyone was masked up. Anyway, that's how I know you, Arjuna. And I'm looking forward to getting to know you a bit more today and finding out what you're up to. I know you've authored a lot of books. You've done a lot of coaching. You're a public speaker. You've been on radio and TV. So, yeah, I'm interested. So who are you? Where'd you come from? Have you always been inclined to do sort of personal exploration and look for the deeper meanings in life? Is that something that was part of your childhood?
So I'm not sure where to begin. I mean, I guess it's quite a kind of personal question you're asking, so I'll answer it in a personal way. I'd say I was born into, through no one's really fault or malice, I was born into a situation of a context of quite elevated suffering, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I was born in 1957, so just 12 years after the end of the Second World War. And yeah, both my parents were really quite deeply kind of unhappy, lost, confused people, intellectual people living in London. So, you know, there were times when that seemed like a great misfortune. It looks like I've frozen. Sorry. There were times when that seemed like a great misfortune, you know, to be born into this. Well, there was actually mental illness in my family, but actually, when things are not hunky dory, it gives you the rocket fuel to look at beliefs and all sorts of habits and ways that we relate. It gives you the rocket fuel to find something different, and you know, there's a. I believe, you know, if you break a bone in your body, particularly when you're younger, that when that bone heals, it becomes stronger than the bone on the other side, you know. And you see this very often if someone gets like an illness, you know, if someone gets cancer and then they really work hard to cure their cancer, particularly through natural means, they end up much healthier than they were before the cancer, if they're able to turn it around. So often if you have some mild pathology, and to just mild enough that it's not going to kind of actually kill you or wipe you out, and you work hard to address it, you become not just like normal, you become healthier than otherwise. So I think that was the, you know, the big incentive for me to examine the makeup of my psyche and my life, was just being born into elevated suffering.
Mm. In that, how long were you in London, and how long were you in this family of origin that wasn't so healthy?
Well, I mean, I lived in London until I went to university, and then after that, when I finished university, then I began to focus more on, you know, spirituality and spiritual.
I was interested to see if you can use that word, because you and I had also discussed, you know.
It's hard to find the right words. So the thing is, these words get co-opted, you know. So a word that might originally have had some fresh meaning, like spirituality. What does it mean? Spirit. What is spirit? Spirit's like this ineffable nothingness that's the source of everything. It's like, well, that's great. But if we start going, spiritual, oh, you read Eckhart Tolle, spiritual, oh, you read Mungbean, spiritual, whatever, you know, it gets diluted through being overused. And that's what happens a lot. You know, words that at one point had some brilliance to them just get overused. It's the same thing with enlightenment, you know, that maybe at some point, you know, you meet somebody and there's like, whoa, he's like, whatever's going on with you is amazing, you know, like, wow. And then you want to put a name on this, wow, you go, well, enlightenment, you know, but then it just becomes this sort of endlessly repeated, oh, enlightenment. And then it loses its meaning because it becomes jargon, you see. So, you know, we use language, and I think it's quite helpful to be able to use language in a fresh way and not to use words that have been overused. You know?
Yeah. So with stating that, I think I want to ask you, and I might have to just use the word spiritual, because that, you know, there isn't, like yes. You said, it's hard to. So when you were young, were you spiritual? Were you interested in you know, sort of, you know, the paranormal or the spiritual, or the, were you in a religious family? Did you have much of that going on?
Okay, no, it was not a religious family. It was the religion was intellectuality, you know, overthinking things. That was the religion. And I mean, it's interesting, you see what happened. You just took the word spiritual and then threw a bunch of things in there, like paranormal, you know, as if being spiritual means paranormal, you know. So yeah, so let's abandon the spiritual umbrella, because it. I'll be honest with you, you know. I mean, I have explored this kind of psycho-spiritual world, you know. I mean, I've including going to India a lot, and you know, yeah, I've really thoroughly explored the world of like personal development, and approximately, this sounds very cynical, but from where I sit, approximately 99% of it is distracting BS, you know, just like pure distraction. But there is that 1%, you know, if you know how to look for it, you know. We have to be really careful, you know, to not get distracted by just following threads all over the place, which ultimately they're not really aligned with that deepest longing that comes deep within you, you know. And that's, if you think about it, before you read any spiritual book or listened to anybody or went to any organization or anything, but when you were just alone, right, and before you let anyone influence you, there had to be a reason that any of that was remotely attractive, right? In other words, look at it like this. If you're walking down the high street, you know, in your town, whoops, I keep freezing. I don't know what that is. Okay.
If you just so you know, when you froze, we can still hear you.
Yeah, but can you, it doesn't the video freeze or not?
Just for a second.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so so imagine that you're walking down the high street, right? And you pass a flower shop and you don't hardly notice. And you pass a clothing shop and you hardly notice the clothing shop. and you pass a travel agent, it's got all these advertisements for like, go to, you know, Ibiza and Greece, and you don't even pay attention. And then you pass a restaurant and you hardly notice what kind of restaurant it is. You just immediately, like, you stop and you look at the menu. Now, tell me, why would you, what would be your condition such that you ignored the flower shop and the clothing shop and the travel agent, but you stopped and looked in the window of the restaurant? What would be somebody's condition to make that so?
Hungry.
Yeah, you're hungry, right? Now, the hunger was not created by the restaurant. The restaurant didn't give you the hunger. It's really important, you know, to see that. The restaurant didn't give you the hunger. The hunger was in you already. And the hunger has intelligence. You know, the hunger knows what it wants, right? And so that's obviously an analogy, you know. And I feel like for any of this to be interesting, for us to read any book, you know, or anything, to pick up on any of this, there is hunger, you know. There is a hunger in us. And the hunger is entirely yours. You know, it's completely authentically yours. Nobody has anything else to do with it, right? However, the problem is that the hunger is undefined, you see. We don't really know what it is. So the hunger, it's rather like being homesick, but you can't remember where you live, right? Mm. So you could be powerfully homesick. You have amnesia about where you live. So you've got this longing, but you can't remember what you're longing for. And that's really, for most people, you know, either we're just sort of dulled out on pleasure, you know, of some kind or whatever, or pleasure or just distraction or numbing, or we reconnect with this longing. Now, what would be ideal? The ideal situation would be that you stay with the longing and listen only to the longing and let it guide you. But that's tricky because, you know, there's just endless amounts of isms trying to sign you up, you know. So there's endless religions, and now there's kind of new agey religions. You know, they're all trying to engage you, sign you up in some body of thought, right? But if we could stay, if it was possible to find the courage and the sovereignty to just stay with that longing and listen to it, or maybe engage with one person, like a coach or a mentor who could really ask you questions about the longing and be curious about the longing, then there'd be a chance for the longing to be satisfied. But the problem is, you know, that although it's well-meaning, we join groups, you know, we join churches and organizations, and where everybody in the group has the same teacher, we're all listening to the same teacher and quoting the same teacher, and it all looks like it's helping, but it's no longer really paying attention to the longing, you see. So the longing is quite mysterious. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so when you were young, did you have a longing? Did you, like,
of course,
I mean, and was it to understand, you said you're in a very intellectual family. Was that part of it, just this longing to understand,
Well, the longing's in all of us. That's the thing. The longing, you know, itself is mysterious. We don't really know what it is until you taste it. You don't know what you're longing for.
So did you have a taste?
Many, yeah. But, you know, yeah, but... So let me just finish that thing, because, you know, the longing, we try to give form to the longing, you know, like, oh, I'm longing for, I don't know what. I mean, sometimes we give it different forms. You know, I'm longing for, let's say, a relationship. I'm longing to find my soulmate. There's a whole industry around finding your soulmate. You know, there's a gazillion people who'll take your money to help you find your soulmate, right? And then, oh, no, I'm longing for, I don't know, it could be enlightenment, you know, which is a very confusing and ill-defined term. Like, what does that mean, actually, right? But, okay, if somebody comes along and says, I will show you the path to enlightenment, just, you know, follow me. It's, okay, I've got a longing, I'll follow you. You know, it looks like you know what you're doing, you know, but it's all a contract. It's all smoke and mirrors, you know? So the problem is the longing is really undefined. You know, if you try and say, what were you longing for? If I answer that question, it's not the longing, you know, because it's the longing for something. As soon as your mind conceptualizes or tries to contain it, it's not the longing anymore, you know. So you could say, and that's, I think that's actually super important, you know, to honor the longing and really be honest that you don't know what it's for. It could take over you. It can keep you awake at night with screaming passion. but you don't actually know what you're longing for. And that's the beauty of something like Rumi. Rumi's calling out, but doesn't know what he's calling out to, you know. And that was a beautiful thing with Leonard Cohen. You know, Leonard Cohen is probably was one of the most authentic, I don't want to use these overworn terms, but like one of the most authentically connected mystical people I've ever met. You know, I was lucky to have a friendship with him, you know. And he's written these songs like, "If it be your will that I sing no more, that my voice be still as it was before." He wrote all these songs about, you know, if it be your will, and, you know, and then he's wrote this other song, "There for You." You know, I went here, but then I realized I was just there for you. And so I said to him one day in his tiny little kitchen, we were sitting at a table, you know, one of those tiny tables that's just wide enough for you to sit, you know, sort of square table, sitting in his tiny kitchen. He lived very modestly. And I said, like, "You've written all these like really devotional like prayers. Like, who are you praying to?" And he said, "Well, if we knew that, you know, it's like, if you think you know what you're praying to, then it's just your mind. You know, that's the whole point, is you're praying to that which you don't know what it is. You can feel the hints of its presence. You can feel the hints of benevolence in your life, but you don't actually know anything about it. And as soon as you give it a gender and a will and all this stuff and a holy book, you've just made a mental, you've just made a game in your mind. It's like, yeah, it's like an ant, you know, an ant on a high-speed train from Paris to Moscow, right? And the ant is like walking across the dining car to get a crumb. You try and explain to the ant that you're actually moving high speed between Paris and Moscow, it won't have any way to know what you're talking about. It's too caught in its own little context, you know? And that's our situation. You know, we are caught in, well, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's sweet. You know, we're little things, you know, we're little creatures, but we're caught in a world of me and my comfort and, you know, and making my life balance, and it's legit, you know. But then we need to have the humility to realize that whatever it is that we're praying to is like way beyond our comprehension. You can pray with tremendous devotion. You can pray and say, you know, "Use me. I have no idea what your big intention is, but use me anyway." That's a great prayer. But to think you have any understanding of what you're praying to is just, you know, self-deception, right? So the longing's like that, you know. But I would suggest, if you can follow that longing and really listen to the longing, and really actually, if you'll excuse my being a little politically incorrect, but if you can really truly give your finger to anyone trying to impose any ism on you at all, including, you know, well-meaning New Agey spiritual teachers, give the finger and say, "No, thank you." You know, in other contexts, I might even use, you know, stronger language, but just like, "Leave me alone," you know, and have the courage to stay in the longing, or, as I said, to be in relationship with one person who is really honoring your longing over their ism, if that is helpful, you know. But otherwise, we just get caught up in, you know, in stuff, you know. But if you can follow the longing, then amazing, miraculous things happen, you know. Then your life becomes blessed. And what I've noticed, and this is what I wrote this book about, this is the last book that I wrote alone. I've written other books with other people since then, but this is the last book I wrote alone. And it's really about what happens, you know, when you really pay attention to the longing. Actually, what unfolds is not so much joy. I mean, it's that's not what people report on. It's not like joy and meaning. It's not actually, if you ask, when someone has found a way to really listen to that longing through a near-death experience or some psychedelic journey or something, and they've really like, whoa, they really engaged with their longing and realized, like, ah, they kind of wake up, you know. I've interviewed like almost 500 people, you know, over the years around this topic. Generally, when you ask people about the impact, it's not generally about themselves. They're not reporting on the quality of my life. What they're reporting on is they found their reason for being here, and it's to do with giving to other people. You know?
Okay. I want to just take a minute to say we're going on a short break.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to come right back and pick up this whole finding your longing or your reason and how that shows up for people. Great. So we'll be right back.
free my mind, open my heart with the whispers of truth, to live a conscious life, to live a conscious life on the growing edge.
And now, here's Allie.
We're back. So we're talking about longing. We're talking about finding our purpose and using that to support humanity or others. And I, you know, as you're sharing, I'm really loving this, what you're talking about. And I want to go back to your childhood a moment. I know this is personal. I keep like a broken record. But did you have some kind of experience that sort of got you interested in your spirituality, for lack of a better word? Was there something that happened?
Yeah, I think I've answered that. I think, you know, the most relevant thing is a lot of suffering. You know, I think there were, you know, up until you're about 14, up until puberty, you tend to just live in the family of that you're born into, and you don't really question it, you know. So even if things are terrible, small children are very accepting, actually. Same thing with dogs and cats, and you know, so when a human being, I don't know about other species, but when a human being reaches puberty, it's the first time we have an opportunity to objectively reflect on the circumstances of our birth, you know. So I think when I got to about 14, I realized, oh my God, you know, it's like, I think there was a chance remark someone made to me at school that something had happened with my family, and this friend said, oh, you really go through it, don't you? And I went like, do I? You know, it's like, really? I mean, he was reflecting on like what a bizarre setup I was born into. And I went, do I? So I think when I was, you know, in my teens, I realized, okay, given the inheritance of, you know, great dysfunction that I now realize is there, I'm either going to, you know, go crazy, I mean, like suffer from severe mental illness, or I'm going to commit suicide, or I'm going to radically transcend what is seen normal. And so it was, I recognized that it needed to be radical. So I can remember like checking out psychotherapy. I went to, you know, I realized like I needed help, but various therapists, I went like, no, this isn't strong enough medicine, you know. And that's how I got interested at that time in this notion of like enlightenment. Like, okay, this is something where you like eradicate the ego and you go into this, you know, expanded thing. But now I realize that, you know, that was the longing for something radical. But I realized the thoughts that I had about what that was at the time were not actually realistic. You know, it's something else than that.
It's interesting. You know, you talk about the struggles you were having. You talk about wanting something radical. My son chose suicide, and you know, he was, you know, in that place of you know, desperation. And I think many of us get to that place where at some point in our life, we look at our suffering, we want something different. And many people find spirituality because of that pressure, that those feelings. And so I know that I was watching.
Can you just make a quick comment?
Yeah,
because you talked about, you know, this, and then you said many people find spirituality. Now, I'm just going to tell you what I've observed. And this is a little bit why I've wanted just to explain. This is why I've kind of fairly radically changed my way of doing things. And, you know, which I put in this book, Radical Brilliance. What I've noticed is, yeah, people have a longing, right? And you could say in many people, the longing is unfulfilled. So people live in a sense of frustration. I think your guest, Naomi, was talking about like things were just like blah, you know, it's like, right. So, and then there are a few people, definitely there are a few people who somehow they're on fire. You know, they're no longer living in frustration or longing or something missing. They're like on fire, right? Now, this is just the observation I want to make. In my, what I've realized after a long time is the people who transcend that, you know, and really find, they're not generally spiritual people. Spirituality doesn't really work, you know? So what I see, spiritual people have a lot of shared beliefs, you know, a sense of kind of belonging together, an in-group, out-group. There are many things about spiritual people, but on the whole, people who identify as spiritual are not necessarily the ones who have found the key. You know, that's why I wrote this book, right? Because actually people who, there are, I know a lot of people who they're just living in a very different way, but it's not necessarily because, I mean, spirituality may be a small part of their life, but it's not central to their life, you know? And actually I think, you know, it's difficult to put, these things are very mysterious and kind of ineffable. But if you wanted to somehow encapsulate it, you could say, you know, supposing, and this is, I'm going to use like fairy story language, and let's not, this is not accurate, it's just a fairy story parallel. But supposing an hour before your father impregnated your mother with semen, you were floating around like a little fairy. Now, I'm not suggesting you really were, because that would be really kind of naive, but let's just supposing you were fluttering with that, you know, little golden wings, and you look down and you see, oh, there are these people having sex, right? And you go like, whoa, I don't know, you know, it's like, it looks pretty rough down there. They've got income tax, they've got war, they've got all kinds of stuff, you know, it doesn't look like a very nice place, but I have to go because I have this thing to deliver, right? I've got something to deliver. Now, we don't want to get too much into like a message or like write a book, because, you know, but there is something I have to deliver, right? So imagine, this is, I think, a nice way to imagine it. Imagine that humanity is in the process of evolving, right? And you can see that. I mean, we're like, you know, we're collectively, it's not looking so good, you know? So we sense that we urgently need to upgrade our game just to survive, you know? And supposing that evolution is huge, you know, it's like, it's such a widespread reboot in every area that no one, this is like the mistake of like the Matrix or even Jesus, you know, it's unrealistic to expect one person to be responsible for, or Buddha or anything, to expect one person to turn everything around. That's just like absurd, you know, but considering how many structures need to be redefined, like finance and the judicial system and the education. So supposing everybody's born with a tiny little jigsaw puzzle piece in their back pocket, right? This is just an analogy, right? Maybe not everybody, but some people are born with this little jigsaw puzzle piece, right? And knowing that if you actually have the courage and the wake up to bring out your jigsaw puzzle piece and slot it into the jigsaw puzzle pieces that are being put together, we will actually see an evolution. But you have to do that, right? Now, honestly, my observation, and, you know, I don't want to be cynical, the great majority of people get distracted, you know. I don't know how we're doing on time, but there's a lovely story, but maybe it's not the time for a little story. It's a great, like, you know.
Yeah, share the story. I love it.
No, it'll take too long. It takes like, we wouldn't have time for it. But anyway, but you could say majority of people are simply distracted, you know, distracted by and you know about distraction from near-death experience. When somebody actually dies for 30 seconds or sometimes longer, and they experience kind of going into a light, but then you do some sort of, you know, intervention and they bring them back. And people who have near-death experiences are like dramatically have a dramatic wake up. They realize like everything they were doing in their life was distraction, and they shift to something else, right? Now, it's really interesting to study. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross did a lot of this, and other people too, to really study what realizations do people have in common when they have a near-death experience. I've never heard of anybody say, I need to make more money. You know, I should have put more energy into making money. or Facebook likes, or, you know, or what is again and again and again is love, you know, like that's such a common theme is actually loving, like deeply loving the people you're connected with, but also this sense of not forgetting the gift that you were born to give, you know, which could take all kinds of forms. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we look to certain figures, you know, like Jesus, Buddha, you know, we could name a lot. We look to these figures as like examples of how to do it right. If you think about it, Jesus did not join a cult, right? Jesus didn't go and sit with a bunch of other people and listen to somebody speaking. Jesus went alone for 40 days and 40 nights and connected directly with Source. Same with Buddha, you know. All of these people, they found the key by trusting the longing within themselves and actually tuning out all the psychobabble. So this is possible. That's what I wrote this book about. It's like radical brilliance is, you know, it's totally based on the experience of people who've done that and who find that the thing kicks in and they discover that they are actually on the earth for a purpose. You know, they're on the earth to give something very specific. But we have to be careful, this thing with purpose, because it can also, like everything, it can become narcissistic. You know, it's like, oh, I need to find my purpose. It's just more about me, 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 me. You know, it's like, I need to find my purpose. I need to, you know, elevate my kundalini. I need to upgrade my, you know, whatever, my, so I need to get more Facebook likes. It's just more ambition, you know? So yes, there it, but I would not suggest that finding your purpose is the point. You know, the point is listen to the longing, let the longing guide you to your authentic self and to the great mystery. And in that, the purpose will, some kind of purpose will be revealed. But if you make the purpose the goal, like I'm trying to find my purpose, it's just more me. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's not like we don't want to shame people for taking care of themselves. But I don't know why this thing keeps freezing. I don't know if you're seeing it too. We don't want to shame people for taking care of themselves. It's good, you know, to take care of yourself. It's just important to recognize that just if we look at research, that's not how people find meaning through focusing on me, 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 you know?
Yeah.
You find meaning through, you know, sometimes through actually going into what you most avoid, through going into the desert. You know, Jesus went, you know, 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness, you know, and that's a good key. Going in the wilderness alone is usually a good thing to do, you know.
Yeah, so talking about going into the wilderness a minute,
yeah.
I was reading one of your posts on Instagram and you were talking about writing the book that you're writing about men, about generations of
Oh, yeah, the novel. The novel.
I
finished a novel, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. And you were asking individuals to share, you know, to read a portion of your book that was based on plant medicine and ayahuasca. And I'm wondering if your thoughts about how working with plant medicine sort of gives you a, you know, a start or a, thought to the system.
Well, first of all, in that novel, because it's a novel, it's a work of fiction, I did actually use ayahuasca in the novel, right? I don't personally take ayahuasca. I haven't taken ayahuasca for, 22 years. And I don't, I'm quite enthusiastic about the use of psychedelics, but ayahuasca is not one of the methods. I just used that because it was a novel, right? So yeah, I would say psychedelics generally have proven to be very helpful if they're used in the right way, because they can, for a few hours, switch off the very limited focus, you know, of busyness, of getting ahead, of, and which our society encourages, you know, it's a very, our society is set up financially that, you know, it's every man or woman for themselves, you know, so you have to kind of get ahead. So yeah, psychedelics can switch that off for a while. Particularly if you do it with a guide, you know, I think it's really Much, much more helpful if you do it with a guide who knows what they're doing. But if you can switch that off and you can actually, that longing will get really dialed up, you know, and you can hear more clearly what is of purpose. Now, personally, I don't emphasize the word plant medicines because I have not discovered that things from plants work any better than things that are synthetic. For example, probably the most useful substance, I said I don't really endorse ayahuasca, but a substance that I thoroughly endorse 100%, which is very misunderstood because of the misinformation from the war on drugs. But LSD is almost a universal panacea. I mean, it's just, it's you're taking it in micrograms, millionths of a gram. So there's zero effect on the body, there's zero toxicity. And yeah, taking it at the right dose in the right setting, it's probably the most helpful substance to reconnect with your own clarity and vision. Yeah,
because I was exploring this when my son was suffering with, you know, mental challenges and addictions, and someone had mentioned it, and so I researched it. I actually was listening to an audiobook when I was up in Nevada City, of a gentleman, a professor that had done decades of studies working with LSD to...
Was that Jim Fadiman?
No, I think Chris Bosch.
Chris Bach, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so have you seen... I know we're coming to the end of our time together. We have about another 7 minutes. Mm. But I do want to hear, what have you discovered with... people that are struggling to stay here, you know, with working with psilocybin or, you know, medicines to help expand perspective or...
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that I mentioned LSD and you shifted it to psilocybin. Was there a reason?
Oh, well, I guess because you said ayahuasca, you weren't that into, and then I made an assumption that maybe it could be. So I wanted to include that
category. Yeah, so psilocybin has a very, like, from a brain chemistry perspective, has a very similar effect to LSD, that they're both serotonergic. They both boost serotonin production. Now, antidepressants limit the uptake of serotonin. They're serotonin uptake inhibitors. But LSD and psilocybin, they boost the secretion of serotonin through the presynaptic neurons. So they have a similar effect. I'm just curious because I just wanted to emphasize that there is a sort of, rather like we think we want to eat organic, you know, we think, oh, we should only use plant-based substances. But actually, this is not. A lot of the substances that produce the best effects are actually synthetic, because they're more precise, you know, like a psilocybin, it's more unpredictable, you know, whereas LSD, if you have a good source, it's extremely predictable. If you get the dosages accurate, you can know exactly what you're doing, and same with MDMA. So I just want to emphasize that I'm not endorsing, you know, using plant-based over synthetic. But in this book, Radical Brilliance, there is a chapter called The Supplements Daddy Will Not Allow. So there's a previous chapter on supplements and then the supplements that Daddy won't let us take. So I cover pretty thoroughly in that book which substances are helpful for this kind of thing, for like reconnecting with your longing and activating that in your life so that you start to live a life of meaning based on your innate values, not what someone else is telling you, not a spiritual teacher or a group, but it's actually coming from within you. And then, yeah, so there's a chapter in that book that is quite a thorough chapter, about 20 pages. It's based on interviews with some of the greatest experts in the world. Great. And it lists the substances that are helpful at what dosage. Yeah.
Great. So I want to switch gears radically. Yeah. Yeah. And I want to touch on your losing your son. And just saying, I'm so sorry. And I want to know how that has impacted you, because having my own experience, you know, I know how radical it is to lose a child.
Yeah.
And I'd love you to speak to that. I didn't want to brush over it, but give you a moment to share your how you are with losing Shuva.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. Yeah, I mean, losing, my son was 25 when he died. Losing a child is like, it's the kind of experience that you really don't think you're going to survive. It doesn't seem, you know this, you know, it is. So yeah, I spent a year really doing nothing but grieving. I just put everything on hold. I just grieved, you know. I think I'm not going to say more than that because it's really super personal. It's not really something that I talk about really on, you know, on interviews. But yeah, I don't speak about him in the past tense. You know, he's very present with me. And I think actually being very close to someone who dies, he died in a very clear state. You know, he was like incredibly happy. I mean, I think the last day of his life, he said to his girlfriend, that morning he said, I love my life so much, it doesn't get any better than this, you know? And that evening he died, and it was extremely sudden. So he was at a party, he was partying with his friends, not drinking, not using any substance, just having a great time. And yeah, it was a very quick accident. I mean, it's just like that. So he died in a very kind of luminous, you know, happy state. And yeah, I didn't really, you know, I've heard people talking about connecting with people who died, and I didn't really ever know about it. I never experienced it before. But with him, yeah, it's been, I would say he really has gone out of his way to make it clear that there's no death, you know, and there are no accidents, really. You know, the circumstances of death are almost, you could say, I don't know. I don't want to make an ism out of this, but he made it clear to me that this, you know, that what we think of as an accident is just because we don't understand the synchronicity of things, you know. But yeah,
beautiful. Thanks for sharing about. I always end with this question.
Yeah,
we all know the song. What the world needs now is love, sweet love.
Yeah,
and I'm sure we all agree on that. Hmm. What does the world need at the moment, Arjuna?
Yeah, love. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm actually finishing a book right now, which is called Steps Towards a Proof for Love. And it's exploring love, not as a relational thing, love as an energy field, from a scientific perspective. I'm writing it with a university professor. So we're aiming to put love on the map as something that can be recognized in, not only in scientific research, but in policy, you know, in the way that we make decisions at every level. Like we don't generally take love as a field into account, but I'm just finishing that book right now.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been an eye-opening conversation, and lots of blessings to you on your journey. And who knows, maybe when I'm in Nevada City, we'll bump into each other in one of those coffee houses.
We'd have to bump into each other. You could phone me up and we could meet.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Arjuna.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for being here today and for sharing our Growing Edge conversation. And we'll see you next week. And I look forward to that. Peace and blessings. Lots of love.
Free my mind, open my heart with the whispers of truth. To live a conscious life, to live a conscious life on the growing